Welcome to Primetime Conversations. Here's your host, James Tunstall.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me. Today, very special guest, a man with over 40 years in the acting career, one and only Mr. Ken Foray. Ken, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I was just mentioned off camera to you. I got my recording times mixed up and I'm like, right, I've got about 3 or 4 hours to kill now. So I've actually just finished watching one of your latest movies, John Henry.
Oh, you really? Great. You saw the crazy character I played, huh?
I loved it. I was looking online and I take no notice what critics say and things like that because that's the job to criticize. But I'm watching it and I'm really enjoying it. And the chemistry between yourself and Terry Crews, I loved it. And I really enjoyed the film. And I thought it was just a well-done film. How much fun did you have doing that?
I had a lot of fun doing that. You know, the character was an old, as they say, an old G. And he was, I'd spent some time being a rough and tumble guy, plus raising a son, and he was funny and charismatic, and I loved playing that character. It was nice, good time. Terry was fun to be around, and he's a good actor, so we had a good time. Jamila was in West Side Story. I got to see it, but I hear she does a wonderful job, so I want to see her in that. And we had to find. Fine crew and cast. Yeah,
I enjoyed it, and it's one thing I noticed with a lot of your characters, they always seem to have memorable lines. And when you first popped up on it, because as the cast list is going, I'm like, oh, Ken's in it, and I'm watching it, and then I realized he was playing Terry's father in it, and yeah, it was just so much fun watching it, so it was really good. I would imagine this was probably one of the last roles you filmed before COVID hit.
It came out and I was very happy to announce it and got ready to do a lot of press and, you know, the usual stuff with it. And that was in January 2020.
Yep.
And and my birthday was February 2020, the 29th, right. First time the 29th in 4 years. And so I look for a very strong year. I was going to do a lot of things in terms of this coming out and a few other things going on. And I had some things in the can, some prospects coming up that I really was excited about. And all of a sudden, I had my birthday party at Musso and Frank's with friends. And I think 2 days later or a week later, they said, we're closing everything. You know, we've got a pandemic going. I said, oh, Jesus, this is crazy. And then so, my film came out, my birthday, and then the pandemic. And I said, how could this be so horrible? The worst situation ever. So, yeah, it was last thing I did when the pandemic hit, and I stayed around and ate ice cream and got fat like most people.
that's something I've done. I've been on a diet since New Year now, so been keeping to it. I've dropped 25 pounds now. But
congratulations!
Yes. I've got about another 85 to go though. That's the problem. So.
You dropped 25, and that's a significant weight loss, and you have to be commended for that. I'm trying to drop as well. I did a lot of weightlifting in my younger days, and I don't lift weights anymore, but I still carry that frame of a bodybuilder. I'm trying to lose as much as I can, and it's just difficult. It really is. So I have to stop like I'm in a concentration camp or something in order to get down to a reasonable weight. I'll never see 215 again. So that's long gone.
Yeah. So, like, I know you're a big guy, and when I'm watching The Rose, especially Halloween, which we'll talk about that later on, but you being 6'5 and being a big guy, how much did that affect you, like getting roles? Did it help you get certain roles, or was it a bit of a detriment?
You know, I don't think it was a detriment, but oh God, you know, sometimes you don't know. When I first started and I was off Broadway doing a play, and there was a man that was a bit older than me. I was young, very young at the time. And some people said, oh, look, I had the lead in the play. They said, oh, he's going to do well. He'll be able to go, do film and stuff like that. And he looked at me, he said, oh, he's too big, too tall. Mm-hmm. And that was work. And so they said, oh, he's just jealous. I've heard that some people, throughout my career, I've heard of some people having that issue with anybody that's taller than them being on the set, and they would have to either dig a hole or elevate the other person or something like that, or not hire anybody above a certain height. And yeah, there were many stories like that. So I guess it's true. I don't know if it ever happened to me. Might have. Could have, probably did have. I'm kind of an imposing figure, and excuse me. I'm sure there might have been somebody who said, "Let's not get that guy. He's too." It's in Hollywood. It's all matching too. You know, yeah. Does this fit with this person? How would this person move with the rest of the cast we've selected? Will the personalities work? Will the chemistry be there? And what do they look like in terms of their look? And you know, you can have two people that are equally as talented, but one fits the look, or the personality, or the charisma is a little different. You know, but in terms of they're doing the role, they're both excellent. They just have a different take on it, but both excellent. But they have to choose. So it's always a choice of what's going to work. And then you have a star that's a little sensitive about guys standing above them, and they're shorter than 5'10", something like that. Then you might have a problem. You know, I've heard of it. I don't know if it's to me, but I've certainly read the stories and I know about some actors I won't mention. But yeah.
Cool. And I was looking through your film career, and I would say I've seen a fair few of your films, but I don't know if this was your first film, but you starred opposite Richard Pryor Bingo, the baseball movie.
Oh, God, yes, yes, yes. Bingo Long, Traveling All-Stars and Motor Kings.
That's right, yeah.
Great movie. James Earl Jones, Billy Dee Williams, Richard Pryor, Stan Shaw, who lives not too far from me, Tony Burton, cast of Joffrey Brown, who was a great stuntman as well, still doing stunts. The Indianapolis Clowns. I have a great story about that if you want to hear it. My grandfather used to take us to see, me and my other cousins, two other boys, to see the Indianapolis Clowns and Negro baseball, and baseball period. We watched the Indianapolis Indians had a farm team, and still do, and they were a farm team for the Cubs at the time, and the White Sox. They were different farm teams with different Cubs, different major league clubs throughout the history. And so we would go to watch the Indians, and occasionally the Indianapolis Clowns would come in every year and play a game. The Indianapolis Clowns were the same as the Harlem Globetrotters in terms of what they did. They were very comedic. They did fun tricks and that kind of thing. They were very, very entertaining. And it was a joyful time just being in the stadium, watching them and being part of that experience. So I got Bingo Long. When I started acting, I got Bingo Long. And my grandfather was from Macon, Georgia. My grandmother's from Macon, Georgia. Yep. And I go to Macon, Georgia, and I'm in a film about the Negro Leagues, and the Indianapolis Clowns are part of the baseball team.
Oh, wow.
Well, yes. Yeah, so coincidences, you know, that kind of thing. So it was like, wow, what am I in the right place at the right time? Is this meant for me? You know, that kind of thing. And so that was a great, great shoot. Had a wonderful time. It was one of the more interesting times in my career. My first film shoot was certainly a memorable one, and one that I'll always, we got great stories for, you know. This could go on and on about the stories about Mingo Long and what happened on that set and what we did. I'll give you a few. I was invited by invitation to be picked up for a party that was being given, a big picnic. And they said a car would pick you up. I said, okay. You know, got this invitation in my hotel room. I said, okay. So I went downstairs at the time, and I was dressed for a picnic. You know, I looked around the limousine out there, and they said, you Mr. Ford? He said, yeah. Yep, well, we're here for you. So where's everybody else? I said, it's just for you. You know, you're the only one, you know, just, yeah, so, well, they're going to follow. They didn't answer that question. So I figured that for some reason I had an individual in my own car, and that maybe the other guys had left already, or maybe they will be picked up later, or, you know, this is how they were scheduling the pickup and delivery and that kind of stuff. So I got in, went out to this island on a lake, and there were hundreds upon hundreds of people playing volleyball and horseshoes and jet skiing on the lake and fishing or whatever you can think of they were doing. Well, they were fishing because it's too much noise, but there was certainly just all the roasting of a pig and, you know, that kind of thing. It was a big, big party and a big A-frame house. And I looked around and I saw no one that I knew. There wasn't another black face there either. So I'm saying, where's Billy Dee? Where's Richard? Where's James? Where's the crew? Where's Tony? Where are the Indianapolis Clowns? There's nobody here. I said, where's Rob Cohen? Where's Batum? Where's any of the, I think Tom Joyner was our production manager. I said, where's Tom Joyner? He should be here. Nobody. So I said, Jesus, this is crazy. So I walked around, and there wasn't another black face there, and no one from our production that I could recognize, and no one said anything, you know, no one really said hi or anything like that. So I said, damn, okay. And then I saw in the distance, I saw Rob Cohen, our producer, and he was talking to someone, and there were men, you know, around him, you know, that kind of thing. And they were facing me, not facing him. They're all in black suits. So I walked up and walked past the guy, said, excuse me. Walked past him, walked right up to Rob. And I said, Rob, how you doing? He said, hey, Ken, how you doing? And Ken, this is Jimmy Carter. I said, oh, hi, Jimmy, how are you? He shook his hand. I didn't realize Jimmy Carter was the governor at the time that was running for president in the United States. Yeah. And I just walked through the entire Secret Service that was guarding him like they were nothing, you know. just out of the way, fellas, out of the way. I see a friend. So it was an interesting time. I think I ended up with two cowboys who were producers from Nashville, and they had the cowboy hats, the belts, the shoes. These weren't shiny shoes. These were guys that really were the real deal. I mean, they were real cowboys, and they were the real nice guys. And we spent some time together. We got in the car, I'm in the back seat of the car, these guys in the front seat, we're driving through Georgia at night to some other city, some town, and then we get to this town and we go back to stage of a venue, and we go into the room with the Allman Brothers, and we're sitting there shooting the breeze with them, and having a drink or two, and having a good time. And that experience, I could go on and on about being along, traveling all sorts of Boulder Kings, but that experience was similar to many of the experiences I had during that production. As a matter of fact, there's one more that I might as well get this one out as well. Richard Pryor gave a party, and he rented a house, and I met his mother, his father, his grandmother, all the people, you know, and he rented a house, and it's party, and everybody, you know, usually if you go to a party, it's a mixed group of people, you know, and they were, you know, everybody's an adult, so everybody's in their 30s or 40s or 20s, and you know that. Usually there are some people standing against the wall, and they have their cocktails, and they're not dancing, or they don't dance really, and they're a little, that's not their thing. This party was incredible. These guys were dancing. It was like they were doing flips. I couldn't believe what I saw. I said, Jesus, everybody's kicking it. The music was really good, and I was dancing, and I said, this, no inhibitions for anyone. Everybody was really into it. It was one of those rare times when you could see a mixed group of people just completely having a great time, and no wallflowers. No one just, you know, I'm not going to do that. No judgment. No one being judgmental or anything like that. Everybody was having a wonderful time. Richard, all of a sudden the music stops, and I say, what the hell, why are we stopping? You know, this is a great time. We'll stop right in the middle of this. This can go on for another 2 or 3 hours. We don't need to stop. There's plenty of punch, plenty of booze, you know, so. Richard said, I want you to hear my new album. And that was This End Is Crazy. And it has this famous section that this little hit that Richard, one of his acts, one of his renditions of this person by the name of Miss Rudolph, the witch lady. Right. Witch lady. Yeah. I'm on the couch, falling off the couch laughing. Guy next to me is falling off the couch laughing. It is so funny. I'm a fan of Richard's anyway, so I know his humor. And I'm just going, I'm done for. And I look up, and those people that were so loose and so, you know, having such a great time, have now reverted to people that were not going to be. They were laughing. They were standing there like statues. And I said, what happened? What happened to you? I didn't say it, but I thought, what happened to these people? What exactly? I don't know what it was, but that was what, besides from working with these pillars of film and entertainment excellence. I had those moments throughout my time in Georgia, where I was in those kind of situations constantly. You know, just having a ball and things happening that were new and strange. And it was quite an introduction for me and to, I guess, big Hollywood productions and also what happens and. And I think probably my grandfather made it happen for me, I guess, because I had an absolute ball. I can't tell you. I'm telling you the things I can say in public. Okay, they were great, great.
Oh, we're not PG. Say whatever you want, Ken.
Hey, let me tell you, they were great. They were some magnificent times. And if anyone wanted to. I can't tell those lovely stories, but if anyone wanted to spend the time on a set, that's the set to be on. And that time, having that ball, it was just fantastic, fantastic.
Yeah, Richard Pryor's, he's up there. He must be my number one favorite stand-up of all time. I love Richard Pryor, and especially his partnership with Gene Wilder, the movies they've done.
Yeah, I love every one of them. He was a gentleman. He was a true gentleman. He was very kind to me. Richard was very, very kind to me. And I'll never forget it. I'll never forget him. I will always be a Richard Pryor fan, and not for his comedy, but for the human being that he was.
Yeah.
He was a great human being. And I adore Richard. I adore Richard. He's a great person. And it was so wonderful for me. He took time to help me.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to. He didn't have to. He took that extra time, the extra steps in order to make sure that I was had a chance and that I was doing the right thing. And he helped me, and he extended himself when he didn't have to extend himself so far, but he went that and more just to help. And I'll never forget him. I'll never forget him.
Yeah.
Love him.
And some of the comedy work, what you've done, they must have rubbed off on yourself, because one of my favorite comedies growing up, Kenan and Kel.
Oh, my goodness.
Obviously, Roger. I absolutely love Kenan and Kel was big over here. We love Kenan and Kel. We had Nickelodeon. We used to watch it every time it came on. I loved both of them. I loved you as the father, because he was just so funny during it as well. How much fun did you have filming this show? Because how big was it in America? Because over here it was massive.
Huge, huge. Oh my God, so huge. I mean, it was a pie in the face and laughter all the time. It was slapstick comedy. It was situation comedy at best. It was a great crew, great cast, great executives working for Nickelodeon at the time, writers that are still with Nickelodeon, that are still writing and have made a career out of writing great stuff for young adults and children's television. And it was great. We had a wonderful time. I can't tell you. We were, it was always a surprise every week what was going to happen. Sometimes you get the script in on Monday, and then on Tuesday, Wednesday, you got another script. So it's always a surprise. So it was great, which is television for you. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed being there. I really was blessed to see Kenan and Kel work together. You know, that was a special chemistry that these two guys had, and I've kept in touch with them, you know, both of them. Yeah, and I occasionally talk to Dan Fisherman as well. So yeah. You know, yeah. So it was a good time. Yeah, 4 years of romp 'em, stomp 'em. You know, what can we do to Mr. Rockmore next?
Yeah.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm done. It was a great show, and then the thing I've noticed, like, during your career, is like so many different roles, and your character range was so different. Because you mentioned your first movie, the baseball movie with Richard Pryor, then you're doing Dawn of the Dead, which I actually rewatched that earlier, which I enjoyed that. Then you go in Leatherface, then you go in Kenan and Kel, and then straight back to the horror with Devil's Rejects. And I'm guessing this is where the relationship with Rob Zombie started.
Yes, yes, yes. Another person that I owe a great deal to. Yeah,
yeah.
Rob. He's a good man. He's a good man, good person. And he has a way with dialogue that I like. You know, especially in and Rejects, and Halloween, you know.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff. You know, I'm a fan of Rob Zombie as well. I didn't know that much about him. I'm a fan of good music, no matter what it is.
Yes.
The rock, the classical, R&B is my favorite music. I grew up on R&B, but I also grew up with country and blues and certainly every other kind of music you can think of. If I like it, I have so many friends who they like one kind of music and that's it.
Yes.
And I don't argue with them, but I can't take that stance. If it's good, it's good. No matter who's making it, it's good. And I enjoy a vast variety of music. I really like good voices. So I like crooners. And I'm a stickler. Sinatra's good for me. Sammy Davis is good for me. Some of the newer people who have great voices, I love their voices. You know, I'm a person who loves great singers. You know, great tenor, great female voices that are great. I like to hear people who sing, and so I didn't know that much about Rob, but I found out, and I'm a fan of his as well. Some stuff of his I like as well. So yeah, I had a great time with Rob, and it was a great experience. Maybe we'll work together again soon.
Oh, fingers crossed. What I'm hoping in the future, because in the Halloween remake, you only had 5 minutes, but it's five of the greatest minutes I've watched in a horror movie. Big Joe Grizzly. There has to be a Big Joe Grizzly prequel movie one day, because you stole the movie. That's found it so good.
That is such a... I don't know about stealing the movie, but I do know that Joe Grizzly had an impact on so many people. I've heard that in the UK. I've heard it here. There are so many people who come up to me. I had many people when it came out in the first years that it was out, who would come up and say that they worked in an insurance company, or they worked in a bank, or they worked in a some other kind of company that, you know, where they just come in and they got 30 or 40 people in a room, you know, and they all have desks or cubicles. They said, we come in and get a coffee in the morning, and somebody would say, I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch, and someone from 20 yards away say, I know I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch. And someone would say, I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch. And they said, it goes on. And they said, you have to be there, Mr. Forey. You got to see it. We do it every morning. And I heard this from at least 8 to 9, 10 people, you know, across the country. You know, and I said, geez, this is really good. And I came to the UK at one point, and everybody was supporting that character, Joe Grizzly, bitch. And everyone was saying, we need to see Joe Grizzly. We need to see a film with Joe Grizzly. We want Joe Grizzly to have his own show, his own film, because we got to see that character again. So it was you know, I originally looked at it, and Rob said, would you want to do it? I said, well, damn, there's not much here. Then I looked at it, I said, no, let's see. He says that there's a line in here that what we have here is a failure to communicate. That's, Strother Martin's line.
That's right, yes.
Yes. So I said, the great Strother Martin, I'll be the second guy to have to say this. So I said, I kind of like that. And then I saw that he would wear I established his haberdashery for the following Halloweens throughout the years, because he's got it for me. So I said, okay, he's getting the costume for me. And Rob wanted me to strange. I don't think I've told anybody this in a while, but Rob, I was getting ready because I knew I had to fight Tyler Mane. I knew Tyler was a 7-foot guy and a 6'11" or something, again, tall guy. And I said, okay, so I wanted to, you know, be in shape to have a nice tussle. And I was, stay in pretty good shape, but I was, you know, still working out fairly good. And I somehow hurt my knee.
Oh.
And I went to the hospital because I knew I had to shoot in a matter of days. And I said, you know, listen, I've got a busted knee, you know, can you fix it? They said, no, you're going to have to rest it. And there's nothing we can do about it. You've rest it, you've knee spring or something that's swollen. So you have to rest this knee. And that's a no, you don't understand. I'm fighting a 7 foot guy in a movie in about 3 or 4 days. I need it fixed now. No, you understand. I just told you, I need you to do something. They finally called security and escorted me out of the emergency room. That's crazy. It even gets crazier. I think that was a week before I had an event that I had to appear at in Northern California. I think it's just outside of in the Bay Area. And somehow I got talked into giving a party. Now, I'm going to give the party. My knee is killing me. And someone was supposed to give a party with me. And that person bailed out. and so I was stuck with a party. And I said, okay, and all these people coming to the party, I had this huge suite over the windows open onto the roof of the hotel, there's a big hotel, but in the side roof or something. It was snowing a bit. And so I gave this party and I stayed in the bedroom with my knee up on the bed. People were coming to say hello, but I wasn't getting out of the bed. I'm trying to rest this knee. I'm not going to, and I'm stuck. So friends of mine would answer the door. And the only time I got up was to pay room service for bringing up more hors d'oeuvres and liquor. And I was, the place had to have at least 50 or 60 people in there. It was that kind of party. Great party. So some of the guys got so drunk, they got out, they opened the windows, jumped out on the roof, making snow angels on the roof, and then throwing snowballs at the security guys. So I get another knock on the door. They say, Ken, it's security. You got to come out. So I lift out. And I said, what is it? I said, listen, we're going to shut you down. You know, you got guys on the roof throwing snowballs at us. We're going to shut you down. We're going to take you to jail. I said, what? Who's doing this? I was in the bedroom. I have no idea what's going on. And so that was just before I shot that Joe Grizzly scene. So I went in, and I think the next week, I'm still just sore. You know, I was sore. I could walk, but I was, I couldn't do very much else. You know, and Rob wanted me to go in and do a spin move in the mirror when I look in the mirror, spin around and go, ah, you know, and I wanted to do it, but I said, I can't do that, Rob. And he looked at me and he said, you hurt your knee, didn't you? I said, yeah. Somehow he knew. So there would have been more to that character if I had never hurt my knee. And I would have made a spin in the mirror and went, hey, not bad, before I went to the can. And we broke down two stalls. They were welded, or at least bolted into the floor. And we broke them down.
Wow.
They put up another, we broke down. That's how intense the fight was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rob would have, and somebody told me this, then I found out this, sometimes people tell you things that you don't really know. You know, people would tell you, say, oh, listen, do you have two people on the corner, they see an accident, and you get a different answer from each person, so, or different description. So I wasn't sure if people were telling me that Rob was, as soon as someone would come on the set, he would say, come over here, and put on my scenes for them to look at before anything else. So he was very proud of that scene as well, from what I understand. So he showed it to everyone who came on the set.
Yeah, definitely great.
Go ahead.
No, so definitely a great scene. Like I said, it was a highlight for the movie for me. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I tell you, I still get it. I'm Joe Grizzly Bitch has become one of the as another one in Dawn of the Dead where there's no more room. I don't say it for people, but that line. Joe Grizzly Bitch is right behind it in terms of people wanting to hear it. Yeah, it really is a catchy. I remember that's another one was that someone else did that I found very, very, very funny. Was I'm Rick James Bitch.
James Bitch. Chappelle, I love it. I wish Rick James was still about because he would have been somewhere I would have loved to have interviewed.
Oh God, yes. See, I understood. I saw him on that show, or just before at that event, that gala event, whatever it was, musical award or something. And what I understand, somebody, an intern or something in the back, had kind of like got in his way and was, you know, kind of keeping back or something, you know, pushing back or wondering what he's doing or, you know, trying to treat him like someone he wasn't. And I think she said, "Who are you?" And I think he just rushed by her and pushed her out of the side. And then we got out the microphone. He said, "By the way, I'm Rich James, Bitch." And I think I was auditioning for a lot of stuff the next day and the next couple of days. And every place I went, I would tell the receptionist, "Did you see Rick last night?" And they said, "No, what did he do?" I said, I told them the story, they died laughing. You know, because they knew Rick's reputation. So yes, it was. So yeah, I'm Joe Grizzly Bitch has traveled for a long way, and it's been it's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
I'd love to do Joe Grizzly. I would love to do Joe Grizzly again. And in as a major character in the film, I think I could do so much with that. Yeah, it's just a great, great character.
Definitely a place for him. Fingers crossed. Once, because I know we're still in the pandemic, but fingers crossed. Once we get past that, there's definitely a film for Joe Grizzly. Definitely.
Rob. Somebody yell at Rob, and then Rob will release it, and we'll find someone. If someone yell at an investor, we'll do it. Absolutely, because I can. My God, yes, that's a great. There's so much meat to that guy. So that character really put a lot of, carry your film.
Well, Ken, it's been an absolute pleasure. But before we do go, tell everyone that you're coming to the UK soon for some conventions.
I think I may come to. I'm talking to. Sussex is in August. Yep. And in April, I may be in Wales at the Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm thinking about at this point. You know, yep. I wanted to do some others, but these are the two that come into play. So I really want to nail those. I'm going to definitely be in Sussex, and I think Wales as well. So I'll be in the UK. Well, my second... called my second home because I love it so much. It's a wonderful country. Really love being in the UK. Can't wait to get bangers and mash. Good bangers and mash.
Next time we'll have to do this in person though, so.
Okay, that's right. And a great English breakfast as well. I've been coming to the UK for 20 years now, maybe or more, and it's just it's a lovely, lovely, lovely place, and I enjoy it. And I've got great friends there, so it's always a pleasure to be there.
Cool.
I'm writing now. I'm on the other end of the camera, and I'm I've written a 6-hour limited series, a historical drama that's very, very interesting, and we're hoping to get someone to take a look, especially we're shopping that around. And I've written a serial killer script, taking a serial killer from 5 years old through his adolescence and teenage years, and all the way to he's a 30-year-old man and has many kills behind him. And it's a very interesting, very dark, but interesting script and character. So that's what I'm doing behind the camera. And I've got a new webpage coming up pretty soon, kimforward.com, but it's not up yet, but it will be. And we hope to do a lot of things there as well. So I hope people will tune into us once we get it up and running. And on Instagram at kimforward8 and Twitter and Facebook. So don't ask to be friends on Facebook. I got 5,000. I can't add any more. So that's it. But please come by and see. There's a lot going on. So come visit me.
Well, again, it's been an absolute pleasure. And yeah, when you're over in the UK, we'll have to try and do this in person next time.
Absolutely. I expect to see you if I'm in Wales, okay?
Oh, definitely will.
Okay, great. Thanks.